Welcome to another episode of Follow the Brand. I am your host, Grant McGaugh, CEO of Five Star BDM, a five-star personal branding and business development company. I want to take you on a journey that takes another deep dive into the world of personal branding and business development using compelling personal story, business conversations, and tips to improve your personal brand. By listening to the Follow the Brand podcast series, you will be able to differentiate yourself from the competition and allow you to build trust with prospective clients and employers. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. Make it one that will set you apart, build trust, and reflect who you are. Developing your five-star personal brand is a great way to demonstrate your skills and knowledge. If you have any questions for me or my guests, please email me at grant.mcgaugh, spelled M-C-G-A-U-G-H, at five-star BDM, B for brand, D for development, M for masters.com. Now let's begin with our next five-star episode on Follow the Brand. Welcome to the Follow Brand podcast that dives deep into the world of marketing, branding, and business strategy. I am your host, Grant McGaugh, CEO of Five Star BDM, where we build five-star brands that people will follow. And today, we have an incredibly special guest, the legendary David Auker. Have you ever considered the incredible influence of compelling storytelling in business? Are you captivated by how the right brand strategy can drive success and make a lasting impact? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you're in for an incredible, unforgettable episode. David Auker is a tour de force in the realm of branding. His journey from a quantitative modeler to an eminent branding expert is nothing short of inspiring. Today, he will be sharing his story, and in the process, unraveling the concept of brand equity and its integral role in business strategy and tackling societal issues. Dave will elucidate on how a narrative can punch through defensive walls, forming strong emotional bonds with the audience. He will walk us through the compelling example of LLB, a brand that harnessed the power of storytelling to distinguish itself and create a resonant connection with its customers. This episode will also delve into branding's role in innovation. Dave will share insights on how brands can distinguish themselves, create a strategic brand portfolio, and use their brand to express their social purpose, further cementing their relevance in the competitive market landscape. As we wrap up the conversation, we hope you'll be inspired to delve deeper into Dave's work and discover the significance of branding in leaving an indelible imprint. This episode promises a rich exploration into the world of branding and its transformative potential for business success. So let's dive into this enthralling conversation. Tune in now. This is the Follow Brand Podcast, where we are building a five-star brand that you can follow. Welcome, everybody, to the Follow Brand Podcast. I am your host, Grant McGaugh. And today, I get an opportunity to speak with a legendary figure, an historical figure in the world of branding, brand messaging, brand relevance, an author of over 18 different books, who, when it comes to understanding how to really bring relevance to your business idea through branding, he has been instrumental in guiding others on a lot of different levels, whether it's in academia, whether it's in the business development at the enterprise level, as well as small to mid-sized businesses. And though I'm directly involved with healthcare, directly involved with information technology, these are the things that allow us to communicate with one another and get true understanding but where we're going from a purpose-driven code that I have. So, David, you'd like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Dave Ocker. I'm talking to you from California. And Grant posed an interesting question to me, and which was about my brand and how that evolved. And I came out of a PhD program as a statistician, and I was a quantitative modeler. And and that was my thing. But during the first 15 or so years of my career, I did a lot of quantitative econometric modeling. But I also found myself, I had interest even back then in social programs and so on. I did my first book was on consumerism, and I got into market research and the application of statistics there. And I wrote a book on with George Day on market research. And then I got into advertising and wrote a book on advertising with John Myers. And then I got into business strategy and wrote a book on that. And I was doing in parallel teaching and research in all of those areas. So after 15 or so years, I was about as diffused and confused brand as you could possibly have. Because I was a quantitative modeler, but 70% of my work was off-brand. And it took me, and I did a series of studies on experimental psychology. I helped create the warmth emotion and studied that. I had 6 articles on that. And I mean, that was totally off-brand. So I was a very confused person in the late 1980s. And then several things sort of happened. One is that brand equity started to emerge as an interest area because the whole concept of building market share, reducing cost, was not only failing to generate growth, it was destroying brands and jeopardizing businesses. And people realized that they needed to go back to focusing a bit on the brand. On brand equity, but nobody knew what brand equity was. And so my first book defined brand equity, and my second book told people how to actually build your brands. And those two books really sort of were the most prominent in my whole career. They both struck a chord and so forth. But at the time brand equity emerged, I was teaching and writing in the business strategy area. And I came to realize that businesses were too focused on short-term financials, and they needed to instead build some long-term assets to have a thriving business. And so I looked around, and in fact, I did a little study which illustrated that the top 10 sustainable competitive advantages people were able to talk about, numbers 1, 3, and 10 were around brand equity. Number 1 was perceived quality. Number 3 was brand recognition. And number 10 was installed customer base. So I decided if I was going to help people build assets, that would be a candidate. And then if you look at my completely all over the map, diffuse background, it turned out that it was really almost always relevant to branding. My market research, my advertising stuff, the strategy stuff, and even the analytical models I did. I did some things relating brand equity to stock return. And so everything, so I sort of had 60 or 70% of my first two books already written because of my writings and thinking in there. So I was just at the right place at the right time. And so I've sort of been able to, ride the race since then. And so my first 4 books, looked at some fundamental issues, not only what brand equity is, how it's defined, and I defined it, it's brand relevance, visibility and credibility, it's brand image, it's brand loyalty. And the thing about my definition that was unique was the brand loyalty inclusion. If you put in brand loyalty into your definition of brand equity management, you can no longer delegate it to the agency. It's no longer just awareness and image. It's brand loyalty, and that affects everything in the organization. And that was really pivotal. And then in my building strong brands, I just had a couple of fundamentals, and that was that, you know, unlike the advertising agency approach, brands are not a three-word phrase. They're multidimensional. And also, you can't pre-specify the dimensions. Not every brand needs a personality. Not every brand has shared values. Not every brand is connected to the values of the company. So you pick what works for you in that context. And that becomes your brand pillars. And those were the fundamentals of my building strong brands book. So anyway, after these books appeared, I now became finally firmly positioned. And so the rest of my career I wrote a book on brand portfolio strategy that sort of showed how to manage brands as a portfolio instead of a single brand. But after those three books, I've really spent most of my time applying brand to major management arenas that heretofore have not seen much branding. So I wrote a book on disruptive innovation, in which I noted that branding is crucial to successful disruptive innovation, and it doesn't appear in any of those books, Blue Ocean, the Christensen books, and so on. They never mention branding at all. But you need branding to position the whole subcategory. You need it to scale the subcategory. You need it to build barriers around the subcategory. And all branding jobs are never mentioned by the core literature. And then I lately turned it into the problem of solving societal problems with my book, The Future of Purpose-Driven Branding. And in there, I said again, you know, the branding has got to play a key role here, because if you have an enormous effort, it consists of grants, volunteering, energy goals, ESG reports. All that is impossible to communicate. And so what you need is branded signature programs and to carry the flag, to communicate what you do, to inspire, to guide. And then I also said there's another brand involved. You got to use these signature brands to enhance the business by building the business brand, by giving it an energy lift, an image lift, and an engagement lift. And when you do that, the business now can view your program, whether it's internal or external. You can move your program as a partner, something that doesn't have to justify its funding each year, something that's really going to become part of your business strategy, and therefore it will grow and thrive and be more healthy in a long term.
No, I love how you found your voice, you know, just listening to you, because so many people, you don't just jump out of bed and I'm going to author 18 books kind of thing. You have to go through a journey, an experience. You have to find some things. You started in research, and I've heard a lot of branding people, you know, they got into research, quantitative analytics, studying, you know, demographics, psychographics, all these different things, even almost from a scientific lens. Now we're in this world of extreme business intelligence, artificial intelligence, things that are impacting our world, I mean, rapidly. AI has now become so widely adopted. It's the most widely or quickest adoption of a technology in human history. In your book, you stress the importance of businesses having a serious and impactful social effort to stay relevant. Could you expand on why you believe this is critical in today's AI-driven age of branding and business intelligence?
Well, yeah, there's several reasons. At the top is the fact that society needs business to jump in and be involved, because business has a lot of of approaches that is just doesn't exist in government. Business has agility. Business has knowledge, all kinds of IP, and a lot of it localized that government can't access, it doesn't have. And business has resources. They have advertising budgets. They have product development budgets. They have the ability, they have distribution. They have communication channels. They have an installed base of customers. They have enormous assets that can be applied to solving social problems. And the a second reason is that, you know, business can get this energy, engagement, this image lift from social programs. And businesses often desperately need that. And if you're making widgets or hammers or milk, it's really hard to gain an energy and image lift and engagement. It just is just hard. But and if you make soap, it's a bar soap. I mean, who can do that? But if you're a Lifebuoy and you have a program, Help a Child Reach Five, as they developed in India and spread elsewhere, they had a video that displayed this program in three villages that got 44 million views. Now, you can't get that kind of exposure and visibility and so on by talking about bar soap.
Right.
You just can't do it. And so it can really help businesses. When it does, that, again, is a feedback loop, because it makes the business, it has an incentive to make sure that the social program thrives and grows.
This is interesting, because we're getting into where I believe in my years, you know, I've watched development and change through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, now in the 2000s. We've got dramatic cultural and environmental shifts that are happening rapidly in American culture, in which if you continue the brand that you've always, you know, brand, or you market the way you've always done business, the way you've always done it, you may be missing the mark very, very quickly because of the dramatic shifts in what is important. What I've found from a lot of people now is, like, they want to know, what does your brand stand for? What is its human impact? What are you doing in the world? Yes, you want to make money, but is that your brand? Is just a profiteer? Or are you actually making a difference in the human struggle? How would you answer that?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think now the people that feel that way and act on those beliefs might be relatively small, but even a relatively small group can mean the difference between struggling and thriving if you're a business. But the probably the most important stakeholder is the employees. You know, companies where the supply of talent is limited really struggle if they can't demonstrate there's a social purpose to their business as well as a business purpose. And that's especially true with young employees. There's young employees that simply are not interested in working for a company whose only goal is to increase profits. And so there's a lot of motivation to move in this direction. And I have to say that companies have done so. I mean, it is hard to find a major company or a minor company or a medium-sized company that doesn't have a social program. And people are spending real resources, but again, they're doing it in such a way that it's not really helping their business that much. Even employees can't enunciate what their social purpose is or what their program goals are, because it's all diffused over grant programs, volunteer programs, energy goals, and ESG reports. Nobody can articulate from that mass of ad hoc sort of diffuse programs, you know, what they stand for socially and what they're contributing socially. So that's where signature programs come in. The Help a Child Reach 5, the Real Beauty Program, and so forth.
You know, I love how you pointed out Help a Child Reach 5. And you get into true significant stories, not just making something up. Or, that sounds great. There's an emotional intelligence here. But I believe that, and then you see some of the brands that really have made strides. They've had disruptive innovation because they're reaching into the actual pulse and the stride of its human counterpart. Is that it's finding its rhythm with where society is moving into. So if you can be able to articulate a story in which, so it's not, I've seen these advertisements now, it's not about the car per se, it's about what you can do with the car, what the car is enabling you to do to enhance your human experience. I really, really like this. I think we need to hone in on that because that's the purpose. That is a great purpose. So you don't have to, yes, you want to give money, you want to do some donations, you want to do some charitable things, but think about how your brand, your product and service actually enables the human being, the human family, the human culture, the human society to advance and then have brand messaging around that. What are your thoughts around on those things?
Well, I wrote a book called Creating Signature Stories, in which I made the point that people in general are just not interested in descriptions of your product, or they're not interested in facts. What they are interested in is stories. Stories break through, and there's all sorts of defensive barriers that are set up against processing information that's not really of interest to you, and even if you get through that barrier, there's a lot of skepticism. There's a yeah, but you're just trying to sell me something. So there comes the role of stories, and stories break through. Stories can tell a message, and I like to say that businesses and parts of businesses ought to have their own signature stories, and these are stories that will break through, can be founder stories like L.L. Bean is how they invented the first sort of boot that shielded you from water, and how they made the first 100 and they were defective, so they took them all back and replaced them. And that story remains to this day as emblematic of the way they innovate and the way they stand behind their products. And you just have to mention that story, and the people that work with or at L.L. Bean, it registers. You just mention the story. Remember the boot, and you don't have to say we make high quality products and we innovate and da da da. And people aren't interested in that, but the story, they are interested.
This episode is brought to you by 5-Star BDM. 5-Star BDM is a professional consulting and advisory group keenly focused on business development services for small to mid-sized businesses and entrepreneurs. Although every business is unique, they often share challenges that can be addressed through smart branding. Services include process improvement and operations, digital strategy and transformation, business intelligence, digital marketing, and personal branding. Our 5-Star business and personal branding company has helped a number of professionals and organizations to optimize and grow. The result is more business, more opportunities, better reach, positive outcomes. Please visit www.5starbdm.com to learn more and view all the episodes of Follow the Brand.
And so that I encourage people to use stories. And there's two kinds of firms. One is that almost all firms buy into the basic idea, but they can't find the right story. And then there's the B2B firms that have hundreds of stories because they have all these case studies about how wonderful their product are. But all these stories are dumbed down. All the emotion is taken out. All the tension is taken out. And they just say, you know, our customer said we are great people. And that's our story. So it's not easy, I've learned. I've learned over since I've written that book that I'm just sort of more convinced than ever that that's really an important element in communicating today. And I've become even more convinced than ever how hard it is. It just sounds easy. Just do your story. And as I say, I've got the consulting firm I'm bound with, Profit. We have 100 stories, but they just have all written to be on one page, and they're descriptive, and they talk about how wonderful our customers think that we are. But during the course of whatever the subject was, there was a lot of tension, a lot of emotion, a lot of high fives and so on. But that just gets dumbed down in part because they're sensitive to the client, and the client really doesn't want people to know how dumb they were at the beginning, and they don't want to have their competitors learn how you can fix yourself. So there's a lot of reasons, but anyway, yeah, I'm a big believer in stories.
Well, I believe in stories too. I believe in your story. What I got out of your story, when you're talking about trying to find your rhythm and you finally found it because it was right timing. Market timing is a lot. And you talked about disruptive innovation. A lot of people are innovating. They're trying to make something different. But timing is everything. I heard an earlier interview in which you were talking about, you don't have to be always the first to market, but you have to be the best at marketing whatever this new widget, product, service may be in order to scale and to scale quickly. Market timing, wow. I mean, can you ascertain that from raw data, from intelligence? How do you get to a point where you feel that the timing is right, the story you talked about is right, and the product and service is well positioned to take off? That has got to be masterful.
Well, in the high tech world, it's matching the problem with the stage of technology. Steve Jobs gets a lot of credit for his disruptive innovations, but they were all based on timing. There was an iPad 2 years before Apple's. There was an iPhone 2 years before Apple's. There was an iPod before Apple's. Sony came up with two of them 2 years before Apple did. But the timing wasn't right because they couldn't hold enough music and so on. And Steve Jobs' genius, I think, more than anything else, was he knew when the time was right. And then he did get it right. But in other arenas where there's not a technology road that you have to enter at the right time, what we've learned is test and learn is really powerful. It's always been there, but something called design thinking has really prompted it. Design thinking is based on the fact that designers of products, of other things as well, of programs, have always been skilled at test and learn. They put out something that's really premature, and then they learn an improvement, and they come out another thing and another thing and another thing. Finally, they get it right. And one of the things that the digital age has given us, like e-commerce, social media, and so on, you can test and learn very cheaply, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so that's one way to deal with the timing issue.
I think that's so important. I think the time is right. A lot of my audience right now that are listening are in the healthcare field. Digital transformation is taking storm in the healthcare world, where they have to innovate now. Taking the world through a pandemic, being able to pivot through technologies like telemedicine, remote patient monitoring, wearables. There's a huge human technology factor that's taking place. Now, this is different from the healthcare world because they've never really had to brand themselves as a part, or I would say in the technology innovation world. They've always branded, you know, great patient outcomes, patient experience, but that experience now has a huge technology component. So now they got to find ways to do things that they've never had to do. So I have found others are now seeking people out like yourself as a brand strategist. Like, here we are. I've been an entity for maybe 50, maybe 100 years. I've had a brand messaging model that really hasn't tweaked or changed tremendously over the last, you know, two or three decades. Now I'm forced into this. My budget doesn't really have it. I'm, you know, brushed up against metrics that have caused me not to have enough investment dollars to put directly into technology at the same time, because I'm managing the risk portfolio that I'm working with. How would you take a look at that situation and help our C-suite executive understand the business strategy and where the brand strategy kind of falls in to that situation that they're finding themselves in right now?
Well, yeah, there's a, yeah, I think that one of the suggestions I make is when you get an innovation that really has legs, you should brand it. And too often it just is lost by some copycat that comes along, and pretty soon the arena is kind of confused and you no longer own something that you developed. And or you can take a development of somebody else, but an improvement, and brand it. And even though you weren't the first, you might be the one that can get the most credibility and owning it. And you know, just as an example, you take Uniqlo, the Japanese clothing retailer that has developed some fabrics that were unique. And one of them was able to keep heat in. So in the wintertime, if you wore this fabric with, it's called Heat Tech, they branded it Heat Tech. If you have a Heat Tech fabric, you when you got warm, you stayed warm. And in the summertime, they have a fabric called Aerism. And there, if you cool off, you stay cool off. It helps you, it just helps you cool down in the summertime. And so they made a huge mark with these two branded fabrics, and they have clothes around each of them. And so, you know, all the other retailers and all the other clothing brands were scrambling to try to match that. But there's only one Heat Tech, there's only one Aerism. And so if you want the best stuff, you go to Uniqlo. And in fact, they're probably not aware that others have matched those things. They just know that there's something called Heat Tech at Uniqlo. They don't realize there's you know, 12 other manufacturers of clothing and 10 other retailers that have already matched that. But the brand does what a brand does. It helps you communicate and connect. So you can brand services, you can brand features, you can you can brand endorsers. But when you stumble onto something that really is a breakthrough, that has legs, that's going to be around for a while, that you're going to invest in, then brand it. And you don't want to brand something that you're not willing to stand behind for a long time and invest resources in. But you do if it's really worth it. And then when you brand it, all sorts of things happen. For one thing, everybody realizes that you branded it. And they realize you're not going to brand something that's not very good. You're going to brand something that's really good. So they're going to apply because it's branded. There must be something there. And then when it comes to communicating, you teach people to, what it's all about. And then they remember the brand name. They might not even remember exactly what the brand does, but they have this vague feeling in their mind. You know, I processed it. I learned. I memorized it. It must be a reason I did that. It there must be something there, and then it gives credibility to any facts, any stories, and that might be associated with the brand. So I think that there's a big opportunity for people for look to things you're branding, and you got to worry about over branding, and you also have to worry about then the brand portfolio, and the roles brands as a team play, which are endorsers, which are branded energizers, which are branded differentiators, which is a source of branded credibility. What role does this thing play? And the right branded feature can be a silver bullet for the business brand. So we just think of what Heattech does for the brand Uniqlo. Uniqlo can say we're innovative and we can do things others can't all day long, but all they have to do is talk about Heattech. And now they automatically get credit for that.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to seeing this change in the consumerization of healthcare and how it's going to change. We've got so many innovations coming out just from our IT world now. We've talked about a number of these things. You've seen over your tenure of time a lot of change evolution. Yet you've seen a lot of things that are still, you would call the foundational aspects, the principles that do not change, that we cannot forget. I love how you talked about human factors. Human factors have always been here. But sometimes I think we get lost in focus around human factors. So I applaud you for bringing that back around as we put together our entire holistic views on everything that we're looking to do from a brand perspective, from a business perspective. This has been wonderful. If you can let our audience know, you've got a lot of books out there, but your latest book, you talked about social impact. Are you working on any new projects that we should be aware of?
No, I'm really spending my time right now. Instead of starting a new book, I'm really trying to get some traction for the book, which I should have called Branding and Disruptive Innovation, but it's actually called Owning Game-Changing Subcategories. And because I think it's the only way to grow. My brand is better and your brand is not a route to growth. And with the AI and digital world we live in that you've mentioned, disruptive innovation is no longer an occasional thing. It's happening sort of much more frequently with much more impact. And there's a lot of reasons for that to come out of the digital world. And then I'm trying to use the ideas in the future of purpose-driven branding to to help nonprofits and to help businesses understand where social programs should fit and the importance of signatures programs that are branded and can communicate their social effort and social purpose.
I want to let you know this. We're going to get ready to conclude here. I'm very proud of you that you bring out these particular conversations that need to be had, and you put them together with purpose. And you've been doing this now for 4 to 5 decades, that you are a game changer. You are an insightful prophet. As they say, not since you're, and I do that because I know you have some association with the company Profit, which I think is awesome. But the fact that you're still staying on the pulse of where we at, this is 2023. You go back in time, you think about, you know, your first books and where you're doing, you know, quantitative analytics and where you are now. Are you proud of yourself?
I think that I set off, you know, maybe 30 years ago to try to help people understand brand strategies and use that as an asset instead of a tactic. And I am proud of the progress that's been made and my role in it, but I'm still a little bit humbled because we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. As you know from your work in healthcare, especially, there's gaps and there's times that we, and especially when there's financial stress on a business, there's times we backtrack, and it's a never ending set of opportunities.
Awesome! This has been wonderful. I'm going to encourage the entire audience. They can go to your website to get all your information at davidacker.com. So you can take a look at what he's got there. If you want to get any of his books, you can go to Amazon.com. You can just type into Google very simply, David Acker, that's A-A-K-E-R, and a plethora of information will come out. And I'm sure you'll be able to get some ideas and some insights. And as you see, you're very, very approachable. And as I stated, I'm very, very proud of the work you've done. I'm glad you're doing the work. It gives us all an opportunity to grow and expand and evolve. So thank you very much for being on the Follow the Brand podcast.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Grant, for your work and bringing brands to the world of medicine and other areas as well.
Absolutely. You take care of yourself.
Okay.